like sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smartin Pants.
I am he.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. Good. I walked over today. It's a gorgeous day.
It's a beautiful day out there.
I was just appreciating the reality of existence.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's hard to appreciate. Sometimes you want to live in that dream world, you know, because things aren't all peachy keen.
Yeah.
But every now and then you find that little piece.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you say, that's pretty damn good.
That's nice. We're exactly the right distance from the sun. We've got just the
yeah.
right amount of electromagnetic protection.
Yeah.
I was walking ultraviolet protection.
I was walking by Brittingham Park, and some of those older houses there, the backyards they're kind of frowsy. I like frowsy, by the way. You know me. I'm a big frowsy fan.
Yeah, you are.
And so
Mr. Frowsy.
Mr. Frowsy. Yeah. I look in the backyards, and there's this carpet of little wildflowers, just eating up the ground there, and I'm just all over the place. I'm just like, wow, that is so great. And the thing about this nice is nobody's doing that. It's just doing it on its own.
You don't dump pesticides and fertilizer on there.
This flower's having a great old time. You know?
And the bees like it,
yeah,
too.
The bees, the deadly bees.
The killer bees. Yeah. What happened to the killer bees?
I don't know. I think they reformed. they're tired of the killing. I wish humans could be that way.
That does happen to humans.
That would be nice.
I mean, they sort of age out of crime.
Do they?
Most people.
I don't know. I think they just tell the younger ones to do it for them.
Well, maybe, yeah.
I'm not looking at you, Israel. But at any rate... I mean, how old is BB right now?
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, I realize he bathes in virgin's blood every morning, but still, I mean, anyway, hey, I got to give you a little, so I brought this in just for you, but
yes.
Also for me, because, you know, it's all about meat first.
Well, of course.
And you as well. But this is 50 years ago. This week was very important 50 years ago in the history of the United States, because it was the week that after lots and lots of trials and testimony and so on, that the president of these United States, Richard Nixon, released edited transcripts of tapes of conversations that he had recorded in the White House in response to requests from the Judiciary Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives. He didn't want to release the tapes. He was compelled to later by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But he said, I'll release edited transcripts.
Sure.
And he thought, and I think his lawyers thought and his advisors thought, this will shut him up, you know, because here it is. But what he did not realize, what he did not reckon with, and this is like 2 days after he released them. This didn't take very long. It was like people just started reading it. What a jerk he was. Like, I mean, it was just, I mean, instantly there was one U.S. House member of the House who was a Republican said, well, do you think that the Nixon tapes had any effect on the impeachment process? Said, yeah, instead of doing it in July, we'll probably be doing it in June now. Because he comes off like a mob boss.
Right, right.
So I'm just going to give you a couple of examples here. The president is asked about perjury, trying to avoid perjury on the behalf of these people that we now know, of course, he was basically allowing to be paid off. You can say I don't remember. You can say I can't recall. And he also says, perjury is an awful hard rap to prove.
rap,
yeah, exactly. So he's talking about how they could cover this, you know, saying that we have to have some kind of cover for the money-raising operation. And he said, I would certainly keep that cover for whatever it's worth. And then he was talking about, he knows where $1 million could be raised.
Sure.
Just like that.
Shake a tree.
But the question is, who the hell would handle it? It's like his only concern is, who's the bag man? You know, whom can we trust to take the $1 million to the criminals to buy their silence? Now, we now know that he knew about this stuff way in advance. He knew about this stuff in the summer that it was happening.
Yeah.
At this point, he's still maintaining the fiction that he didn't know anything about it, and he's just trying to basically handle the fallout. But the way he's handling the fallout is, he's not saying, wow, this is a disgrace, and oh, this is awful. And he's like, how can we hide it from people? And what will it look like? I mean, is the rap going to hit us or not? You know, what's going to happen? How much money are we going to give these people? You know, I mean, that's all he's talking about. That's it. And immediately, Republicans were just like leaving him in droves.
Right.
Now, Kitty Witties, think of the difference. This man was saying this stuff secretly within his little cabal to his cronies, and it became public, and people of his own political party were horrified. Today, we have a person who was president and wants to be again, who's saying these things openly, repetitively, and much worse things than this. And people are like, oh, that's the guy.
Yeah.
I want him.
Well, not only that, but then he'll say something like just horrifying.
Yeah.
And they'll spin it and say, well, that's, they'll either say, well, he didn't really mean that, or that's not such a bad idea. You know,
yeah.
like shooting nuclear bombs at hurricanes. Well, we don't know. That might work. You just, you know, you got to think outside the box.
Expands the borders of crazy a little bit farther, you know, into the rest of the world. But I just thought, I was reading this and everyone was horrified. People in his own party were horrified. Yeah. Almost right away, in terms of what he said.
Well, what I mean, back then, there was a lot of kind of myth making about the presidency.
Sure,
you know, like you know, the reporters kind of had this deal with that they would like clean up their quotes and kind of present them as the fearless leader, no matter who it was, whether it's Eisenhower, Kennedy,
they didn't need
Johnson.
PR really, because everybody was doing it for him.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, well, respect the office.
Yeah,
everybody,
of course.
There was like this kind of built-in thing, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, but you know, there was this built-in respect for the institution.
Yeah,
but now we've gotten, you know, where we know if Bill Clinton likes boxers or briefs. We know way too much about Donald Trump.
They ran the clip of Stormy Daniels on the Kimmel show, where she was asked to look at a variety of different sizes and shaped mushrooms.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
And she said, "Could you hold it sideways so I could see the right angle?"
No.
And it's like, "No, let's not talk about that."
So. Trump's own lawyer quoted Cohen tweet where he referred to Trump as, I can't say it precisely.
Oh, no, don't say
but,
it.
But Von Poops in his pants.
Lots of Z's in there. I like that. That's a nice German thing.
One of the comments, and normally I like to leave the kids out of this, the youngins, but someone did say, well, does that mean his youngest kid is Baron Von
Well, it is funny he named him Baron. I mean, just be open about it, right?
You know? Well, that was one of his aliases when he would call into talk shows and pretend he was somebody else. He'd use the name John Baron.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Good to know. I guess I'm just not
it's
up
the weird,
on
the weird psychoses.
My Trump trivia is not as good as I thought it was. All right, John Barron. All right.
Someone wanted me to write a Donald Trump quiz book a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I turned it down. And my kid rubs my nose in that every once in a while. You'd be rich.
Like,
yeah, I just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. But that'd be like running a sweatshop. Running a sweatshop rich. I just don't want to do it. Yeah. That's the wrong kind of rich.
But that's always her Trump card if we get in an argument about
something,
you know. And that poor word is going to be, it's going to be just like wiped out of the dictionary eventually. But
if
we're arguing, I'll say, you didn't do the dishes. And she'll say, well, you turned down the Donald Trump book.
Well, the word in English comes from French. I mean, his name is from German.
Yeah.
But the word Trump in of course, originally was a card word. But it just means trick in French. That's all it means. Trump.
It means the same thing with Stormy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, any rate. So I just want to put it out there. It's not like the good old days were better. No, they weren't. But, you know, I always say if something is actual, it's possible. I mean, there was a point in time where people were horrified that the leader of their political party, no matter how much he agreed with their beliefs or how much they wanted to win over the libs or whatever it was, were still thought that there was something dreadfully wrong with someone who acted and spoke in that way. And Nixon, to his credit, tried to keep it quiet because he didn't think it was a good thing to say it all out loud. But now it's just like, look at this. We're getting things here. Oh, look at that. Isn't that fun? Film shot at WRT screens this Saturday.
Oh.
There was a film shot at WRT? This spring, communications arts students at UW-Madison asked WRT if they could shoot their film here, largely over spring break. And, of course, the station said yes, And now the film is going to be shared with the world.
All right.
It's going to premiere tomorrow at Marquee Theater at Union South.
Oh, cool.
And it's called Tuned In. And it's set in an early 2000s radio station. So let's see, when is this going to be? It's going to be Saturday, May the 4th, be with you, at 7 p.m. And it's part of a communications arts showcase at Marquee Theater at Union South. So seating is first come, first serve. So you come and bring your machete. No.
Put on your elbow pads.
Yeah, your elbow pads, right. You know any roly derby people?
Knock a few on. Heads. Oh, very cool. I didn't know they did that here.
That's excellent. There's Gladys just brought us a picture of some of the people that were in it, too. That's really, I wish I could show that on the air, but you can find it probably online somewhere. So it's quite cute.
Excellent.
Yep. Thanks, Gladys. Oh, so Nixon versus Trump.
Well, what's happened is that, you know, what do they call it? The Overton window, where it's just kind of shifts all the time. I mean, you know, when Reagan got in similar trouble with the Iran-Contra, they learned from Nixon. I mean, they destroyed all the evidence and they dummied up.
Yeah.
And then they found the fall guy.
With Reagan, it wasn't very hard.
Well, yeah. I don't remember. Oh, yeah.
What's my name?
Probably. Well, then they found, you know, the fall guy that the CIA director who had the brain tumor.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty convenient.
It was the brain tumor that caused it.
Yeah. Blame the tumor. But then they knew he would die soon.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Right.
But, you know, so I'm. But
Casey was his name, wasn't it?
Yeah, William Casey. Yeah, but they learned to not, you know, to. Well, I think Nixon at one time, they asked if he learned anything. He said, I should have destroyed those damn tapes.
Yeah, of course.
Not, I shouldn't have broken the law.
Consistent with what we've discovered from listening to the tape. So that's nice. He's consistent.
And we saw it with the war in Iraq with the Bush-Cheney that they never remembered anything when they, you know, had to testify about it. And, and it was, I don't know, it was he did, you know, somebody else did it. And
Speaking of days gone by, I've seen a lot of stuff recently where people are comparing the protests right now about what's going on in Gaza and United States support for Israel and so on to the anti-war protests of the of the late 60s.
Yeah.
And I've seen some let's forget about what's going on right now for just a moment with those protests. But I've seen some very disparaging things said about the protests back in the day. And I just want to remind everybody, and I'm sure our listeners know this, this was an existential threat to people's lives. I mean, there was a draft going on back in those days. When people were protesting the war, it wasn't some thing that was just going on. We were in a war, and people could get actually drafted
and
to kill people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when I hear these armchair historians spouting off about, you know, it never pays to protest or whatever, because I've heard a lot of that nonsense recently. I'd like, you know, do you know why they were protesting? Do you remember that they could get, people could get sent to war? And if you were a woman, your boyfriend could be sent to war, your brother could be sent to war, or, you know.
Yeah.
And then
a kind of a corollary to that, people started looking at the war
and
saying, this really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's not very just. I mean, it's
it's not like it was just some exercise of, you know, in it's the fad or something.
Right.
It was like a life and death struggle in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't a social event.
Yeah. To dismiss it in that way just really irritated me. I mean, I was not old enough to be a part of that. Of course not. But just having a modicum of knowledge about what was going on at the time gives you an insight into why people's passions were so high.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just some
abstract
thing.
It was a rare thing. I mean, you know, other wars had had anti-war movements.
Of course.
World War I did pretty strongly because it was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
But
why are we doing this?
Yeah. Well, we can't do World War II unless we do World War I.
And no more Christmas trees. Makes perfect sense.
Kick that toxin.
Kick that toxin, whatever you do. Well, that, all right, I get that one.
Hey.
You know
what? Okay, Christy Gnome.
I was hoping you'd go there. That was the funniestly weird thing of the whole entire week. Like, I guess she tried to, like, she's, you know, she's like the...
I'm the farmer.
Yeah, I guess she thought she'd be like the Sarah Palin kind of, you know.
Right.
I'm a real hard ass. I kill bears with my bare hands, you know, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, okay. Yeah. But she said she hated that dog. That was the part that got me. I mean, you know, my father killed one of our dogs. It was very unwell, and we didn't have money to take it to a vet.
That's different. I mean,
yeah, it's you know, it's an awful thing to happen, and I was in high school. I remember being very upset. But I mean, to say you hate the dog, I mean, she literally said that in her quoted remarks. And then, of course, as everyone's made fun of, to just like to try to get everybody's, I guess, on her side, she talked about how she shot some horses, too, while she was at it. I'm like, oh, man, woman, what's your major malfunction?
And that sack of kittens.
Yeah, we won't go there. Yeah, I think she's trying to get the all-important cat vote is what I'm assuming.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, because one thing about Americans, we all hate dogs. Yeah,
yeah. Real way to read the room.
Somebody said that a bunch of the people sniffing around to be the vice president on the ticket were going down to Mar-a-Lago this weekend to, you know, kind of, as I said, sniff around, and you know, J.D. Vance and Tim
what an
Scott.
Odious pimple.
And somebody wrote that, well, Christy Nolan won the shooting competition.
Well, you know, listen, considering the threats that Mike Pence faced, maybe she's sending a message. I'm not afraid to use a gun. I mean, that might be something if you're Trump's vice president. You really do want to communicate early on and often.
Not a wimp like that Pence guy.
That Pence. I'm not waiting for God to intervene.
You're trying to hang
me. Block and load.
I'm going to come out blasting.
Exactly.
I thought she, I, you know, you don't know, but I kind of thought she had the inside track on that job. But
she did a total makeover for him.
Yeah, she did.
She looked like an Auburn... Ivanka. I mean, that was, you know, she knew exactly what she was aiming
for. Right, exactly. She went into the plastic surgeon with a picture.
That's what I want right here.
They all do.
Yeah.
Oh, so. Duluth man charged for allegedly writing the word plunger across the city.
Oh, very nice.
Okay. They found
details. It. Details. Do tell.
The Duluth man faces first-degree damage to property for a series of graffiti incidents. They arrested Mason Manso, 22, on Tuesday after a graffiti call at the Dublin Irish Brew Pub. The criminal complaint said they found a can of blue spray paint and two large markers in his backpack. Investigators believe he's responsible for writing the word plunger across both public and private properties since February.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Plunger.
Plunger.
Like a toilet plunger, I guess?
Yes. I don't know what that means. I may have a hard time with his message. I guess they want to
he
say...
He needs to workshop that a little
bit. Yeah, if I was the judge, I'd be like, could you tell us a little more?
Listen, I'll knock 6 months off your sentence if you tell me what the hell you were thinking.
What are you trying to tell us? Well, I have also a story of bad behavior, but I would put this in the category of they'll always be in England, because this happened to a British passenger, a man by the name of Alexander Michael Dominic McDonald, 30 years old, of Chelmsford, England. He was physically restrained on a United Airlines flight from London to Newark just back in March. They were trying to go to Newark, New Jersey, and he was so obstreperous that they had to divert the plane to Bangor, Maine. And I think maybe Bangor, Maine had something to do with it, but they're charging him over $20,000 in restitution as a result. He's been in custody. Mr. McDonald has been in custody since March 1st when he was arrested after his flight landed at the Bangor International Airport. He pleaded guilty on March 22nd to one count of interfering with a flight crew, which is a felony punishable by up to 20 years in prison.
Wow.
According to an FBI affidavit, about 160 passengers and 10 crew members were aboard United Airlines Flight 883, which left Heathrow Airport near London on morning of March 1st, and were headed for the Newark Liberty International Airport in New Jersey. Several hours into the flight, the purser, that's the lead flight attendant, heard Mr. McDonald arguing loudly with his girlfriend. And if you've ever been to England, you know exactly the kind of lout that we're talking about here.
Soccer hooligans.
Soccer hooligans, yeah, probably with a shaved head. Asked him to lower his voice, but of course, he only yelled louder and actually started yelling also at another flight attendant. They tried to calm him down, and he would not listen and continue to be verbally and physically aggressive. And let the courts know that I'm making the drinky-drinky motion right now. That's right. He had a problem. Oh. And so, yeah, he was drinking too much, which, again, never happens in England. This is the number of incidents involving unruly passengers has actually been steadily dropping. The record high, as you recall, was back in 2021, which after COVID, I think everybody wanted to knock somebody in the jaw. But the crew communicated with the flight tower in Bangor that there was a customer appeared to be intoxicated.
Wow. So. Here's a follow-up. We got an email in from melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com. Remember last week I'd mentioned that I've been watching the program Shogun.
Oh, yes.
And I noticed in the credits they had someone listed as the kimono technician.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought that was kind
Watch
of...
Watch those OBs. That's what I was saying. Yes,
that was kind of interesting.
Exactly.
So we got an email from... I'm probably going to butcher your name. Sorry here, but it's Nobuyoshi.
Okay.
And they say they've never missed an episode of your show for 10 years since they moved to Okinawa. And,
wow. Oh, I'm so excited.
And they say Kitsuki... is a specialist. Kitsuki specialist is a government recognized profession with official certification.
Very good. Well, it's an arcane art because, of course, people don't wear kimonos that much these days.
Yeah. Right?
It's not something you know a lot about. It's like what I was telling you in France, where they have like wine experts and then they have cheese experts. And then it turns out, and this is also recognized by the government, they have people who are involved with wine and cheese pairing. So they're wine and cheese pairing experts.
Oh, sure.
And companion and I, once in one of our visits to Paris, had the opportunity to go to a dinner where everything was arranged by these wine and cheese pairing experts. And I had an interesting conversation with one of these people. Again, you have to go to a school and you get a certificate, and it's a big, big deal. And he said, normally it's an easy job, except, and he mentioned the time that there was a perfumier's convention in town.
Wow.
And these are men and women who have extremely sensitive, you know, nasal capacity. And everything that they were pairing that the normal person would think, oh, that's great. They had all these like weird undertones and overtones for these perfumiers. And they were like, ugh, this is awful, you know? And I thought, I just love the idea of a civilization that's so exquisitely attuned to pleasure that you have people that are licensed to be wine and cheese pairing experts.
They're like aliens that can see in different wavelengths.
Yeah, it is. It's just like that. Yeah. I mean, you learn to recognize the smells and the pairing is even more intense.
I read some stories during the COVID epidemic of people with those jobs who caught COVID
and they lost their sense
of smell and they were devastated. I mean, it was like they totally lost their ability to do their job anymore. And a lot of that's kind of your identity, too.
Yeah. So I got I was able to meet a minion just the other day. Very nice fellow. But he had a complaint. And you were listening, minion. I was worried about... It turns out he had a complaint about his mindless minion card. He said his number was wrong. I said it was Googleplex, but apparently I didn't put enough zeros in there. It's one of our fans, so obviously they noticed.
you're missing three zeros.
so at any rate,
you need the slashes.
I didn't know whether I should talk with him because we were unclear about what his mindless minion number was, and you can't have mindless minion related conversations without authenticating the number.
Yeah.
I just want to remind that minion, and you know who you are.
We have to check with the government official that monitors such things.
Exactly. So the federal office of minion management.
Minion technician.
Yeah, exactly. if you want to do another card, I'm happy to make one out for you, and we'll get Mel and Floyd to sign it and everything. But just let me know.
If you're not in our system, we can't deal with it.
Yeah, you're going to have to start. Yeah. You have to go back to the end of the line, I'm afraid.
Go to line B.
Which, at the current rate of movement, it's a little bit like ice. Where it's gonna, I think we're predicting 2027. You'll come up, so
you'll eventually get halfway there.
Yeah,
and then eventually you'll get halfway there again.
Yeah,
and then again you'll get halfway there.
Yeah, so. And if you're Zeno, you'll be used to it. But other than that, you'll be confused. I got to say, you know, the Biden administration is at least on the surface, they're acting like they're kind of confident. But I'm a little worried about a couple of stories I saw this week. Because on Tuesday, the Biden administration released rules designed to speed up permits for clean energy, and which is great. But a lot of people are saying that this might be they're trying to rush through a bunch of environmental rules before the election, which is kind of like, okay, good, I'm glad, but what are you not telling us about what you're thinking about your chances here? But yeah, so this is it's part of a deal to raise the country's debt limit. That was the thing that they negotiated last year. There, Congress is requiring change to the National Environmental Policy Act, which is 54 years old. It was again, it was negotiated under the Nixon administration. And it's a bedrock law to requires the government to consider environmental effects. And they're trying to get this all nailed down in terms of what the new policy is going to look like. The National Environment and Policy Act was signed into law by Richard Nixon back in 1970. And they want to make sure that they nail down a lot of this stuff before apparently another administration comes in to do it for them. Along the same line, this week, the Biden administration... Again, in perhaps in advance of what they fear might be a good election season, there's a flurry of changes they put into place with respect to efficiency standards for appliances, specifically for residential water heaters.
Mm.
And the Department of Energy said that these new standards, if you take them all together, would save American households and businesses about $1 trillion over 30 years. But of course, there's an initial outlay.
I'm against that.
Yeah. And because the initial outlay can be high, despite the long-term positive effects, then, you know, the short-sighted Republicans, of course, are doing their usual nonsense. And several representatives just this week introduced legislation with names like Hands Off Our Home Appliances Act and Liberty in Laundry Act and the Stop Unaffordable Dishwasher Standards Act, which, of course, the acronym is SUDS. Because what they have to do all day, this Republican Congress
work
people,
on acronyms.
Work on their acronyms, yeah. That and get rid of their speaker. So it's just like it's all go there.
We need more knives to put in Johnson's bag.
Where are the knives?
We're all out of knives. Yeah. We go through them so fast
it's
nowadays.
It's amazing.
Well, they're gonna get my kerosene fired hot water heater out of my hand.
I think they're asking
my
for
cold dead hands.
Well, my whale oil is just going to be completely.
I think we should go back to whale oil. It's like,
you should run for Congress.
It was traditional. Yeah. I don't know why we ever got off the whale oil standard. Every once in a while, I
that's 37 whales right there.
You know, the truck brings you a whale every once in a while. And you
plug that baby in and you're ready to go.
Put it into your furnace.
And for your corset, the whale baleen is just the best.
Perfect.
I mean, it's flexible
perfect.
And, you know,
form-fitting. We've lost a lot in this country.
We really have. So, let's butcher more thinking
creatures.
And then
you get whaling songs. You get whaling novels.
Yep.
There's a lot of spinoffs there that people forget about.
I have a couple of friends, a married couple whom I adore, and they take it upon themselves to read classical literature every now and then. Like they read War and Peace and things like that. So they're reading Moby Dick together right now. I love it. I love the idea of a husband and wife sitting down. It's like, let's read Moby Dick, dear. You know, I just think that's again, there's a little piece of beauty in the world when I hear something like that.
Oh, that's nice.
It's just nice.
You know, they made movies out of that. You can just watch the movie.
Yeah.
With Gregory Peck.
Yeah, I know. That is the least unhinged Ahab I've ever seen. Come on. Too many hinges.
Yeah, that's right up there with John Wayne as Genghis Khan. I mean, it was like Hollywood was really strange back then.
Well, that one is because they couldn't use an Asian actor.
Well, John Wayne.
John Wayne, that's true.
Oh. They couldn't use an actor, is what you're saying. Yeah.
No actors for this.
So here's another little piece of Trump trivia. I told you this over an email, but I don't think we talked about it on the air.
No.
There was a story that to relax after these stressful days of sleeping through court, on the weekend.
Sleepy farty.
Sleepy farty. I worked with that guy. Yeah.
Let one rip Van Winkle is my favorite. I heard Jimmy Kimmel say
that's
one.
That's pretty good.
Snoozing B. Anthony.
It's come to the point where like Snopes has to investigate whether he's passing gas in the courtroom or not.
Well,
unverified is what they've come up with.
It's those detectors are not as sensitive as they should be.
It's still cold in there. But on the weekends, he likes to go back to Mar-a-Lago and he plays the big shot there. You know?
Yeah, of course.
He goes and they have weddings and stuff, and he always crashes those because he wants to be the center of attention at the wedding. But they said one thing he likes doing is playing DJ. He's got his little iPad, and he plays music on that, and he plays his favorite songs, like one of his favorites, James Brown, "It's a Man's 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 World."
Oh, my Lord. Of course, that's his favorite.
My God. So, everything is
so
just...
So, Mar-a-Lago is like if Louis the 14th was a tasteless a-hole, basically. It's like, yes, here I am at my fabulous estate. Like,
He had a former Japanese minister or prime minister or something visited Mar-a-Lago a week or so ago.
Oh, yes.
And Trump gave him a quote key to the White House. Like a key to the city kind of thing.
Oh.
And, you know,
he's dictator in exile.
Yeah. So, yeah. But the thing is, they changed the locks after he left.
And counted the spoons.
We're missing 800 boxes and 300 spoons.
Yeah. There was a big bin out back, too, with a lot of red Christmas trees in it. Those went pretty fast.
Tourist mauled after rolling down window for bear selfie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bears can take their own selfies. Thank you very much.
A Scottish tourist is thankful to be alive after a close encounter with a wild bear. She had been vacationing in Romania with her friend when the woman decided to drive through the Carpathian Mountains, as one does.
Yep.
During the outing, the woman came across a couple of brown bears and did their best to get a photo of the wildlife. And she said, what happened was the bear came up to the window of my friend's side, and no problem, it let us take a picture and went away. But I didn't get a proper picture, so we went back, and it was at my side of the window.
Oh, yeah.
So
and I'm a lot tastier.
So she wanted to get a good picture of it, so she rolled down the window. She said, we saw these bears, a mummy bear and a baby. They were gorgeous.
Oh.
But they weren't gorgeous. The mummy bear was hungry and thought my friend was going to be lunch. So, I mean, she's fine.
It's hard taking care of a kid.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
Well, especially when they want something to eat, you know. It's like, I want a tourist today, Mommy.
Yeah.
When Malvina was little one time, I mean, she was probably, I don't know, two maybe. She was in the back seat of the car, and I drove through the drive-up window at the bank and at the credit union.
Yeah.
And I pull up there and, you know, giving them my paperwork and stuff, and I hear this little voice in the back seat saying, I want fries.
Wow. Train him early, huh?
That's when I realized we were eating too much fast food.
Yeah. Well, let's see if it comes in that vacuum tube that they send out. Yeah.
So she wanted to get a nice selfie with the bear and thought, you know, well, you got to roll your window down to get a good picture.
Course, yeah.
So, I've noticed in movies, this is going to ruin a lot of things for people, so I'm going to take great pleasure in this.
Yeah, right.
But if you're watching a movie, notice how many times somebody gets out of a car and you know, like they slam the door, and the window is rolled down. The driver's side window is rolled down.
Okay.
You know, which, you know, I mean, in a lot of times these are like cop movies and stuff where they're in you know chasing the bad guy or they're in a bad neighborhood or something. Yeah. You know, you would never leave your window rolled down.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. So, but I assume it's because they don't want the glare for the camera.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. And that's the only realistic thing you'll see in one of those.
Yeah.
Everything else completely truthful.
That's true. Well, another thing is the streets are always wet, especially at night.
Yeah.
Even if it's not raining, just because it looks kind of cool, you know, you get the reflections and stuff. So it's sort of the opposite of having the window rolled down. But
this for some reason just made me think of my dad saying he hated musicals. And I was like, why do you hate musicals? And he goes, well, that never happens in real life. People just don't start singing. And I said, okay, how many fade outs and jump shots do people normally have in real life? Oh, yeah, that's true. That's not terribly realistic either, is it?
That was like, oh, who was it? I think it was Peter Jackson, the director or somebody. Mm-hmm. Was they were talking about lighting the different, you know, like the Hobbit movies and the Lord of the Rings stuff. And, you know, they were in the caves and somebody said, well, where's the light coming from? You know, like, like where would the light come from in a cave? And he goes, well, where's the music coming from?
Well, the magic elves, of course.
The elves like to sing.
They do. All
right, we have to take a break. We have to play some announcements, and then we'll come back in a few minutes with...
The bitter, bitter, bitter irony of the anti-Semitism bill that is being contested in the House of Representatives.
Oh, I don't know if I want to hear that.
You wait till you find out who's against it. You'll be shocked.
And some monkey news, an orangutan who is self-medicating.
All right.
With Jameson, I think is how that usually goes. And that's on my bad breath. You know my face getting short and I got the blues.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in homebrewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 2 open participating member seats and 1 open listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today. Get on the good foot.
Ooh, I got to get on the good foot. And we're back. We got a message from someone or?
Fan mail from some flounders.
Yes.
Now, this is a message from Ralph of the Events Committee, and it's to remind us that next Saturday, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, May 11th, from 2:30 to 6, there's going to be live music at the Wart Stock.
Oh, yeah.
WRT Stock warm-up party, which is jointly hosted by WRT 89.9 FM and Malthouse. And among the music that you will be hearing, live music on the patio, if it's nice, is Anne and the Okies, which is bluegrass and Americana, and the Firesides, which is Appalachian and traditional folk.
Ooh, right up your alley there.
Indeed. And my mother was frightened by a banjo, by the way, so that's why I'm the way I am. Join us as we get ready to ignite festival season. You know, my mother played a mandolin in a band. I've told you that before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
my parents had a little bluegrass band.
She had the beehive.
She did have a beehive. She had a beehive. But until I was out of high school, she had a beehive. The bees were very grateful, but the rest of us were a little worried about her. It was my mother played the mandolin, and my dad played the lead guitar, and his mother played the rhythm guitar, and his father played the fiddle. And they'd go all over southern Ohio and embarrass me and my sister. That was the reason why they did it. But the Malthouse, in case you're curious about this particular set of musical talents, is going to be at the Malthouse is at 2609 East Washington. It is free, but donations are welcome for performers and, of course, for your favorite radio station, WRT-FM.
All right.
So that's May the 11th, the Saturday.
Next Saturday?
The Saturday after this one, yes.
An orangutan in Indonesia has self-medicated using a paste made from plants to heal a large wound on his cheek.
Yep.
It's the first time a creature in the wild has been recorded treating an injury with a medicinal plant.
Yep. Obviously, humans did it at some point, too, but it wasn't recorded.
Yeah. The tough part was for him meeting the copay, actually.
Yeah, you got to go to Janesville, and it's only one day a week, and you know, and the provider is just like out of, you know, they're outside the system.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's just, Indonesia's outside the system.
It's really hard for
yeah,
an orangutan. So self-medication is the way to go.
Yeah. So the orangutans, of course, are our closest relatives, and this scientist says that this points to the similarities we share with them.
Yep.
We are more similar than we are different.
Yep.
So...
I was comparing cat stories. I have a couple of one family member and one close friend who have cats that sometimes get a little, I don't know, a little difficult, a little
sure.
snarky about things.
Oh, yeah.
And my one friend, he had a cat platform next to the window, and he'd open the window up so the cat could enjoy, you know, the birds and the smell things and stuff like that. And then there was a little bit of a cold snap, and he closed the window. And the cat immediately came over and bit him on the ankle. And of course, people always say in circumstances like this, oh, it thinks it's people. And it's like, no, we think that they're not people. You know, it's like the problem
wild
is
animals.
We are. Yeah. I mean, we do the same things. We just also flower it up with a bunch of like noises from our mouths when we do it. You know, but I mean, don't we do the same stuff? I mean, come on. It's like we're all animals. So speaking of which, So the Republicans in Congress, as always, everything they do, it blows up in their face these days. They're
Lon Borbart.
Yeah, well, they're they're trying to pass this legislation called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, and of course, this is part of their little plan. You know, everything's owning the libs, where they're trying to get you know, make fun of the Democrats and make people look bad for, again, what are this some anti-Semitic speech that you've seen in some of these protests on campuses across the United States and elsewhere. And but they're trying to like hold the Democrats' feet to the fire, saying that they're tolerating anti-Semitism just to please their liberal base. But here's the thing that's hysterically funny. And again, the Republicans can't do anything without this rearing its ugly head. Some GOP members on the far right are upset about this because they firmly believe that Jews did kill Jesus, and they're really worried that, wait for it, that this law would outlaw the Bible.
Okay.
So, and you can guess who's leading the charge.
MTG.
Good old MTG. MTG is right. MTG. Republican of Georgia, you know, the space laser lady, as she's known to by many.
Can't the Jews just use their space lasers?
Yeah, what's the deal? They don't need our help. She said she opposed the bill because it would convict Christians of anti-Semitism for believing the gospel that says that Jesus was handed over to Herod to be crucified by the Jews, which is all made up anyway, so who cares? Speaker Mike Johnson... That was me. That was my editorializing.
Okay.
Mike Johnson and other Republican leaders have been, again, trying to, you know, rub the Democrats' nose in all the campus unrest. And that's all they know how to do these days. And, of course, progressives have sided with protesters. Many also noting that, you know, that Hamas is not great and so on. But, of course, that would have, you know, involve having two views at once. And so can't have that. But at any rate, so the bill would for the first time enshrine a definition of anti-Semitism into federal law, which, all right, maybe. But it was also instruct the Education Department to consider whether investigating allegations of discrimination on college campuses as a result of protests. I don't know what you're supposed to do about protests, but apparently you're supposed to do something. And then that would lead to federal funds being withheld from a college or university that basically doesn't you know, crack down on these things. But Marjorie Taylor Greene and Representative Mike Lawler and, I mean, there's Matt Gaetz.
No.
Matt Gaetz is opposed to
the
this.
Usual suspects.
Yeah. Matt Gaetz said he called the legislation a ridiculous hate speech bill. He argued that the gospel itself would not meet the definition of anti-Semitism.
Right.
Which, you know, that might be true, actually. We'll have a separate conversation about that.
Yeah, you're so close there. Well, Gaetz gave his interview from the high school prom last weekend.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Wanda May, could you hold this beer for me? The Anti-Defamation League considers the assertion that Jews killed Jesus an anti-Semitic myth. And, you know, I got to tell you, even the Catholic Church, our buddies the Catholic Church back in 1965, formally ruled that Jews cannot be held collectively accountable for the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. But, of course, the southern half of the United States is slow to catch on. So.
Well, that's the Catholic Church.
Yeah, right. They're going to hell, too.
That's not Christian.
Right, according to, I'm sure, wow. Marjorie.
So. And how many angels can dance on the head of a pin?
As many as want to.
Yeah, okay.
They're immaterial beings.
Oh, okay.
That's the answer, by the way, because you ever get asked. Yep.
Researchers discovered 27 original volumes containing the lost works of Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm.
Oh, yes.
In Poland this weekend.
Very good.
The Brothers Grimm collected and committed to paper and popularized many German folk tales,
mm-hmm.
and populated a lot of Disney films, are considered some of the most famous folk.
Those are the culprits. Are they also responsible for that Jerry Lewis Cinder fella? I've been waiting to know who to hit on that one.
Even as a kid, when I was totally indiscriminate watching anything, yeah. I couldn't stand to watch
Does
that.
He have to cross his eyes so much?
Yeah. The volumes contain a large number of footnotes by the authors, making them an even more important find.
Yep.
So.
They were philologists. That was their major job. They were trying to trace the origins of various languages, including German.
Oh, really?
And they were very interested in folk beliefs and folklore because they thought, you know, as society becomes more, you know, they're right at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and the society becomes more bureaucratized and middle class and so on. All these crazy views and funny stories that people tell will go away. So let's collect that stuff.
Well, we can. I mean, I'm a strong believer that, you know, things like mythology and folklore are just really important to a society, and it's important in understanding a society.
Plus, it's just fun.
Well, yeah. Well, and plus those are like gruesome as hell.
Oh,
You know, we got the cleaned up versions
of
them, but there were ones where like they would like butcher the children and then put like. Pig skins on them.
I mean, what is Hansel and Gretel except for mom and dad butchered the kids during a famine, and then they said, oh, they were eaten by a witch in the woods. I mean, that's all it is, right?
Kids, what kids?
Yeah, what kids?
Oh, they went out, they found this candy house.
Yeah, that's Oh, yeah, the candy house ruse. Yeah, okay.
Well, they didn't butcher them. They just had to downsize. They just had to let them go.
Downsize, yeah.
Sorry, kids. We're going to have to let you go.
Medical experiments, right. Well, and the original Cinderella, Aschenputtel. I mean, I remember reading that when I studied German.
Is that the Iron Shoes one?
No, that's just the Cinderella. She doesn't have a fairy godmother.
Yeah,
it's the soul of her dead mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's gonna like stick it to the fairy the stepmother. By going to the grave of her mother and saying, "Mother, please."
That makes more sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. But the version we get is Frenchified. It's like a little airier and fairier.
Well, there was one version of those where at the end. She got a revenge on the stepsisters.
Yes.
Where they had to wear these red hot iron shoes and they like danced until they dropped over.
Well, the one I read, the birds, because they were these little birds rather than being like little mice or whatever like they had in the Disney movie. There were little animals that helped.
Yeah.
And so the little birds at the
pecked their eyes out.
No, they did. So they had been bringing like the things to Cinderella, like the little slippers and the little dress and everything that she wore to the ball. Those were all things she prayed to her mother, you know, please mom, help me out. And then the birds would, you know, do the dirty work. And so in the end, when the evil stepsisters
fly my pretty
the birds came and pecked their eyes out. That's the hard-ass version.
Yeah, I mean,
I loved those when I was a kid. My mother would read those. And
like the real version?
Yeah, the original ones. Yeah.
Well, I could see your mom doing that.
Relishing every moment.
Yeah. All right, you got the revenge.
So my favorite Grimm's fairy tale is The Straw, the Coal, and the Bean. And I used to read that to my little sister when I was, because my little sister's much younger than I. I would read that when I was taking care of her when I was in high school. And The Straw, the Coal, and the Bean is a story about a woman who's about to make some beans, like boil up some beans. And so she puts some, you know, some water in a pot, and then she puts some straw down, and then she gets a coal to light the straw.
Sure.
Well, just as she's about, she picks up the coal, and just as she's about to light the straw, a piece of straw jumps out and runs away. And then she's startled, and so she drops the coal, and so the coal runs away. But the fire started by this time, and so she's about to put the beans in, but one of the beans sees what's going to happen, and so it leaps out, and it runs away. Yeah. Right. So the straw and the coal and the bean decide to create a little association. You know, like, you know, here we are out in the world. We got to work together, bud.
Yeah, sure.
So they're all working together.
An HMO over there.
So off they go, and they're walking along, and they come to their first obstacle, which is a big crevasse. And so what happens is, well, what are we going to do? And the straw says, okay, I'll throw myself across the crevasse, and you guys can walk over on my back. And they're like, okay, great. So the coal goes first, but of course it gets halfway across the straw, and it burns the straw in half, and they both tumble down at the crevasse and hit the water, and the straw drowns, and the coal, you know, basically goes dark. And the bean thought that was so hysterically funny that it started laughing, and it bursts its little side. But unfortunately, a traveling tailor came by and felt so bad for the bean that it stitched it up, and that's why to this day, beans have seams. My sister loved that story. Totally perverted her brain telling her that. Tell the part about the bean laughing. And I was like, yeah, the bean thought it was so funny. Exactly. It's Nelson.
Well, there's another grim tale. I forget what it's called now, but I think it's a grim one.
Hey, story arc, kids.
Yeah. No, it's like, this guy's like Edward Scissorhands. He's got like these razors for hands.
Oh.
And I mean, and you see a picture of it, and it looks just like Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah,
so that's obviously where that came from.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. So
there's lots of things you can't do when you have scissorhands. It'd be very frustrating. I'll just leave that out there.
Especially when you're a teenager.
You probably heard about the stowaway cat. I think everybody has.
Oh, yeah, the stowaway cat.
Yeah, yeah. The best joke I heard about this was they were talking about how it was in there with no food and no water for 4 days, and somebody observed that, actually, it would have been a great Amazon worker. Prerequisite.
Too bad it wasn't a Boeing box. The top would have blown right off.
Yeah, exactly. Now, have you had a cat? I know you love
dogs. Yeah, we have a cat now. Yeah.
You have a cat?
Okay. Yeah, Kimchi.
Oh, that's right.
It's Melvina's cat, but she tolerates me. And as you mentioned earlier.
As does Melvina.
That's what I meant. No, as you mentioned earlier, I'm the window opener. That's my main function for the cat.
You ever get bit?
No, she doesn't bite me. But she gets annoyed at me if I shut the window. So, you know, it's like, well, okay, it's 30 degrees outside. We're not having the windows open. And she gets really mad at me.
They get really snitty little looks on their faces.
Yeah.
But
cat plays fetch, too. She brought me, like, one of her little jingle balls, little fuzzy ball. And we were playing fetch for, like, half an hour the other day.
Rover.
it was very strange. Fire destroyed much of a Los Angeles County Fire Department station earlier Wednesday.
Oh, the bitter irony.
In Huntington Park. It burned fire trucks and paramedic units. Station firefighters were awakened about 4 a.m. by a passerby who alerted them to the fire. In my hometown of Ottumwa, Minnesota, they had the fire station, and then there was this music store next door. And one day the music store caught fire and burned all the way to the ground.
Wow.
So they were little.
Those are some hot licks.
Little slow to get there. So. That reminds me, Dwayne Eddy died this week.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was still alive. He was like 86 or something. But
I was telling a friend you saw Graham Parsons, and he was
Graham Parker.
Oh, Graham Parker.
Graham Parsons died like 50 years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was worried about.
How was the show? It was great. Went with my dead mother.
Excellent. Okay, I've got to get that straightened out. My friend did look at me a bit oddly. Hey, here's an article I brought in for one reason and one reason alone.
Yes.
The headline. Brewery ordered to contain stench.
Oh, is this La Crosse?
Yes.
I knew it.
You knew exactly what was going on. Yeah, it's crossing the Cass Street Bridge over the Mississippi can be a beautiful experience as long as your windows are rolled up. Used to have that experience where you go by Chillicothe back in the day. The city brewery's bioreactor along the Mississippi has been pumping out hydrogen sulfide for years. And
that's
finally
rotten egg smell.
Exactly. It's really smelly. It's a colorless flammable gas. It emits a strong smell like that of rotten eggs. And in the case of City Brewery, it's a byproduct of their wastewater treatment from the plant. Mm. But I just love it because I love,
it's not their new light beer out there.
Come for the taste, stay for the stench.
It's our version of White Claw.
I just love a headline that has the word stench in it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You don't see that enough.
I know.
You don't see the word stench in the newspaper.
I thought this was America.
Nearly. Exactly.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has banned lab-grown meat.
Really?
Saying he will save our beef from the global elite and the authoritarian plans.
Oh, snore.
So DeSantis is going to save your meat.
Cows kill.
Florida is fighting. Yeah, speaking of cow farts, Florida is fighting back against the global elite's plan to force the world to eat meat grown in a petri dish or to eat bugs, DeSantis said. The first in the nation law prohibits anyone from selling or distributing lab-grown meat in Florida. Similar efforts are underway in Alabama, Arizona, and Tennessee. Shocking.
When a capitalist whore like him is talking about global elite, who's he talking about?
I don't know.
Who are those people? Name three.
He went to both Harvard and Yale.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Obviously, they didn't brainwash him sufficiently. I thought that was the way they brainwashed people into being in the global elite. But apparently, they were down that day.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of which, another bizarre thing that was in the news, a right-wing network retracted a false story.
No.
It did. They retracted a false story about our buddy, Michael D. Cohen, the former lawyer, of course, to Donald Trump. Fixer, they're often calling him. Retraction came after Cohen hired a leading defamation lawyer to address a false report. The false report had been that Cohen had been the person who actually had the affair with Stormy Daniels, and that he was paying this off for himself. And apparently, there's no monetary damages, but the story that they managed to recover, Cohen just wanted to knock it off. But the story is being removed from the website and all social media. And so Cohen has a lawyer. The lawyers have lawyers. Then they have little lawyers, too. This is the same lawyer, Justin Nelson, that you may remember. He represented the Dominion voting system.
Oh, right, yeah.
That brought that big suit against Fox. And so he was. They weren't going to go up against.
Gets your attention.
Yeah, when you get almost $800 million in a settlement
from Fox,
yeah. you're not going to screw around if you're if you're one America News. you're one boner pill away from the bankruptcy anyway.
Some gold-plated coins.
Yeah. I mean, come on,
some prepper soup or something.
Exactly. But I mean, so the retraction was part of the settlement. Cohen said he didn't want, he didn't want any money. He just wanted him to knock off their line.
Yeah.
But of course, that's the thing. When you've got this giant thing you've got to constantly defend, then anybody that's in that thing's orbit, is fair game. And so it's like, well, no, he was doing it because he was having the affair with Stormy Daniels.
Right, right.
Affair, that's to glorify it. But,
it was Bill Clinton, I heard. But
did you really?
Yeah. I don't know.
You should call OAN.
It was in the National Enquirer. So MAGA stands for Making Attorneys Get Attorneys.
Did you make that up?
No.
No, that's too good. Excellent. Oh, dear.
Oh, let's see. Quickly here, poverty tops smoking as the major death risk. A Vanderbilt study found that people who earn less than $15,000 a year died on average more than 10 years earlier than those whose annual income exceeded $50,000.
My parents fit that profile to a T. Both died in their early 70s.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. You talk about being pro-life. I mean, never mind.
You're beating a dead horse that somebody wants to shoot.
Yeah. And we know who that is.
And we know exactly who that is.
All right, we got to declare the weekend. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be, I don't know.
What's it going to be?
Something. I don't know.
Come on, tell us.
I haven't looked. I don't know. I'm not like Kreskin or something. Yeah. I don't know. How can we tell what
you're
the
pretty amazing, though.
How can we tell what the weather's going to be ahead of time?
I don't know.
No one can do that.
I think we got to ask the Lord.
one can do that.
Put that up to the Lord.
All right, Pants, great seeing you.
You too,
as always. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues Friday on My Mind. You are listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, May 3rd.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the birthday of folk musician Pete Seeger. Seeger and his music would become staples of the U.S. labor movement. He was born into a musical family. His father was a scholar of musicology, and his mother was a concert violinist. During the 1940s, Pete Seeger joined with folk music legend Woody Guthrie to form the Almanac Singers. The band traveled the country supporting the Congress of Industrial Organizations. At picket lines, union meetings, and workers' rallies, Pete Seeger was there providing the music for the movement. In the 1950s, Seeger became the target of the anti-communist hysteria that swept the nation. He was blacklisted, shows were canceled, he lost a recording contract. Yet despite this repression, Seeger kept singing the songs of working people and standing up for justice. During the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the environmental movement all marched to Pete Seeger tunes. When Seeger died at the age of 94, labor leader Jen Fuentes reflected on the impact of his music in an article in USA Today. She said, "These songs are what allowed workers to sustain themselves during times of adversity. He's a legend in the labor movement for his folk music that has spoken to the labor struggles throughout the year."
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say, man.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.